Chapter 11. The university had been transformed, and Harry Seldon could not refrain from being pleased. The central rooms of the project complex had suddenly sprouted in colour and light, with holography filling the air, with shifting three-dimensional images of Seldon at different places and different times. There was Dawes Venerbally, smiling, looking somewhat younger, Raish as a teenager, still unpolished, Seldon and Amaral looking unbelievably young, bent over their computers. There was even a fleeting sight of Ito Demoiselle, which filled Seldon's heart with yearning for his old friend, and the security he had felt before Demoiselle's departure. The Emperor Cleon appeared nowhere in the holographics. It was not because the holographs of him did not exist, but it was not wise under the rule of the Junta to remind people of the past Imperium. It all poured outward, overflowing, filling room after room, building after building. Somehow time had been found to convert the entire university into a display, the likes of which Seldon had never seen or even imagined. Even the dome lights were darkened to produce an artificial night, against which the university would sparkle for 3 days. 3 days, said Seldon, half impressed, half horrified. 3 days, said Dawes Venerbally, nodding her head. The university would consider nothing less. The expense, the labour, said Seldon, frowning. Expense is minimal, said Dawes, compared to what you have done for the university, and the labour is all voluntary. The students turned out and took care of everything. A from-the-air view of the university appeared now, panoramically, and Seldon stared at it with a smile forcing itself onto his countenance. Dawes said, "You're pleased. You've done nothing but grouse these past few months about how you didn't want any celebration for being an old man, and now look at you." "Well, it is flattering. I had no idea they would do anything like this." "Why not? You're an icon, Harry. The whole world, the whole empire knows about you." "They do not," said Seldon, shaking his head vigorously. "Not one in a billion knows anything at all about me, and certainly not about psychohistory. No one outside the project has the faintest knowledge of how psychohistory works, and not everyone inside does either." "That doesn't matter, Harry. It's you. Even the quadrillions who don't know anything about you or your work know that Harry Seldon is the greatest mathematician in the Empire." "Well," said Seldon, looking around, "they certainly are making me feel that way right now, but 3 days and three nights. The place will be reduced to splinters." "No, it won't. All the records have been stored away. The computers and other equipment have been secured. The students have set up a virtual security force that will prevent anything from being damaged." "You've seen to all of that, haven't you, Dawes?" said Seldon, smiling at her fondly. "A number of us have. It's by no means all me. Your colleague Tamwal Ilar has worked with incredible dedication." Seldon scowled. "What's the matter with Ilar?" said Dawes. Seldon said, "He keeps calling me maestro." Dawes shook her head. "Well, there's a terrible crime." Seldon ignored that and said, "And he's young." "Worse and worse. Come, Harry. You're going to have to learn to grow old gracefully, and to begin with, you will have to show that you're enjoying yourself. That will please others and increase their enjoyment, and surely you would want to do that. Come on, move around, don't hide here with me. Greet everyone, smile, ask after their health, and remember that after the banquet you're going to have to make a speech." "I dislike banquets, and I doubly dislike speeches." "You will have to anyway. Now move." Seldon sighed dramatically and did as he was told. He cut quite an imposing figure as he stood in the archway leading into the main hall. The voluminous First Minister's robes of yesteryear were gone, as were the Heliconian-style garments he had favoured in his youth. Now Seldon wore an outfit that bespoke his elevated status, straight pants crisply pleated, a modified tunic on top. Embroidered in silver thread above his heart was the insignia, Seldon Psychohistory Project at Streeling University. It sparkled like a beacon against the dignified titanium-grey hue of his clothing. Seldon's eyes twinkled in a face now lined by age, his 60 years given away as much by his wrinkles as by his white hair. He entered the room in which the children were feasting. The room had been entirely cleared, except for trestles with food upon them. The children rushed up to him as soon as they saw him, knowing as they did that he was the reason for the feast, and Selden tried to avoid their clutching fingers. "Wait, wait, children," he said. "Now stand back." He pulled a small computerized robot from his pocket and placed it on the floor. In an empire without robots, this was something that he could expect to be eye-popping. It had the shape of a small furry animal, but it also had the capacity to change shapes without warning, eliciting squeals of children's laughter each time. And when it did so, the sounds and motions it made changed as well. "Watch it," said Selden, "and play with it, and try not to break it. Later on there'll be one each for you." He slipped out into the hallway leading back to the main hall and realized as he did so that Wanda was following him. "Grandpa," she said. Well, of course, Wanda was different. He swooped down and lifted her high in the air, turned her over and put her down. "Are you having a good time, Wanda?" he asked. "Yes," she said. "But don't go into that room." "Why not, Wanda? It's my room. It's the office where I work. It's where I had my bad dream." "I know, Wanda, but that's all over, isn't it?" He hesitated. Then he led Wanda to one of the chairs lining the hallway. He sat down and placed her in his lap. "Wanda," he said, "are you sure it was a dream?" "I think it was a dream." "Were you really sleeping?" "I think I was." She seemed uncomfortable talking about it, and Selden decided to let it go. There was no use pushing her any further. He said, "Well, dream or not, there were two men, and they talked of lemonade death, didn't they?" Wanda nodded reluctantly. Selden said, "You're sure they said lemonade?" Wanda nodded again. "Might they have said something else and you thought they said lemonade?" "Lemonade is what they said." Selden had to be satisfied with that. "Well, run off and have a good time, Wanda. Forget about the dream." "All right, Grandpa." She cheered up as soon as the matter of the dream was dismissed, and off she went to join the festivities. Selden went to search for Manella. It took him an extraordinary long time to find her, since at every step he was stopped, greeted, and conversed with. Finally, he saw her in the distance, muttering, pardon me. He worked his way over to her with considerable trouble. "Manella," he said, and drew her off to one side, smiling mechanically in all directions. "Yes, Harry," she said. "Is something wrong?" "It's Wanda's dream." "Don't tell me she's still talking about it." "Well, it's still bothering her." "Listen, we have lemonade at the party, haven't we?" "Of course, the children adore it. I've added a couple of dozen different Mycogenian taste buds to very small glasses of different shapes, and the children try them one after the other to see which taste best. The adults have been drinking it too. I have. Why don't you taste it, Harry? It's great." "I'm thinking, if it wasn't a dream, if the child really heard two men speak of lemonade death..." He paused as though ashamed to continue. Manella said, "Are you thinking that someone poisoned the lemonade? That's ridiculous. By now every child in the place would be sick or dying." I know, muttered Selden. He wandered off and almost didn't see Dawes when he passed her. She seized his elbow. "Why the face?" she said. "You look concerned." "I've been thinking of Wanda's lemonade death." "So have I, but I can't make anything of it so far. I can't help but think of the possibility of poisoning." "Don't. I assure you that every bit of food that came into this party has been molecularly checked. I know you will think that's my typical paranoia, but my task is guarding you, and that is what I must do. And everything is no poison, I promise you." Selden smiled. "Well, good. That's a relief. I didn't really think..." "Well, let's hope not," said Dawes dryly. "What concerns me far more than this myth of poison is that I have heard that you're going to be seeing that monster Tenna in a few days." "Don't call him a monster, Dawes. Be careful. We're surrounded by ears and tongues." Dawes immediately lowered her voice. "Oh, I suppose you're right. Look around. All these smiling faces, and yet who knows which of our so-called friends will be reporting back to the head and his henchmen when the night is over. Ah, humans, even after all these thousands of centuries, to think that such base treachery still exists, it seems to me to be so unnecessary. Yet I know the harm it can do. That is why I must go with you, Harry. Impossible, Dawes, it would just complicate matters for me. I'll go myself, and I'll have no trouble. You would have no idea how to handle the General. Selden looked grave. And you would? You sound exactly like Elah. He, too, is convinced that I am a helpless old fool. He, too, wants to come with me, or, rather, to go in my place. I wonder how many people on Trantor are willing to take my place, he added with clear sarcasm. Dozens? Millions?